You're listening to The World Is Just a Book Away podcast. I'm James Owens, founder and CEO of The World Is Just a Book Away, a nonprofit organization on a mission to promote literacy and education by developing libraries and programs in disadvantaged communities around the world. For more information about The World Is Just a Book Away, please visit www.wijaba.org. That's WIJABA.org. My guest today on The World Is Just a Book Away podcast is Selina Tusitala Marsh. Selina is a renowned Pacifica poet and current poet laureate. Considered one of the most important poetic voices of her generation, Selina's work has appeared in more than 70 anthologies, academic texts, print, and online literary journals. A powerful advocate of Pacific poetry and literature, Selina coordinates Pacifica Poetry, the only audio, visual, and textual archive of Maori and Pacific poets, and the companion site of the New Zealand Electronic Poetry Center. A leader in New Zealand literature, Selina has been the recipient of many honors, including her appointment as an officer of the New Zealand Order of Merit for services to poetry, literature, and the Pacific community. Her appointment as poet laureate, her selection as the 2017 New Zealand Auckland Book Awards judge, and the Master of Ceremonies at an evening with Barack Obama. In addition, evidencing her international standing, Selina was instated as Commonwealth Poet in 2016, representing 53 Commonwealth nations. In that role, she wrote and delivered a poem titled Unity to the British Royal Family and assembled dignitaries at Westminster Abbey. I'm so delighted today to have with us Selina Tusitala Marsh, who is the Poet Laureate of New Zealand. And in addition to that, was the poet, Selina, what was the official title? The Poet Designate of the Commonwealth?
Commonwealth Poet for 2016, and part of that role was to compose and perform a poem for Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II for Commonwealth Observance Day, which is a day held every second Tuesday of March since the mid-1950s to celebrate the institution of the Commonwealth, which of course has its own challenges and is quite problematic now.
And the Commonwealth itself, for people who may not know, is comprised of 53 nations around the world, correct?
Correct. And so the link that they all have is some colonial relationship with the British Empire, the former British Empire, and but increasingly we talk to one another directly rather than going through this empire centre. But it is one of the few umbrella organisations that brings such diverse communities together. So that's why I support it.
Excellent.
In this iteration anyway.
Right. I want to start with a very basic question, because I feel like a lot of people, myself included, actually, don't really know a lot about poetry. I don't know if that's your experience, but can you just briefly say what it means to you to be a poet and how that evolved?
Sure. Well, just to go back a little bit, you pronounced my name beautifully. Tusitala is the Samoan word for storyteller. And the really interesting legacy that's been handed down to me through my grandfather, his name was Vaile Tusitala, is that Samoan chiefs also named Robert Louis Stevenson, or gave him the title Tusitala. And of course, Robert Louis Stevenson is one of our great canonical authors, wrote Treasure Island and The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and he lived the last 5 or 6 of his years of his life in Samoa, and Samoan chiefs wanted to honour him for not only his skill in writing, but for his support for Samoan independence from a New Zealand colonial administration. And so there's that whole legacy of storytelling, the white male canon and their voice, and then bringing kind of a more diverse voice into the mix. And that's all kind of wrapped up in that one name, Tusitala. And I find myself now carrying that mantle of being storyteller and using poetry as my particular vehicle for voice. And the thing about poetry is that I find it very difficult to write a narrative that is structured and has the necessary development to hook a reader in and then to kind of bring the reader up through a climax and then, you know, have this great big lovely ending. I see life as more like kind of selfies or continuous snapshots of the world, and I like the principle of contiguity, where you put two things together, two unlikely things together, and then the space in between those two unlikely things, the juxtaposition, creates its own story, and story open to interpretation, and I can see a story in it and you'd see a different story in it. And I like holding stories quite lightly in the hand, and that's what poetry does for me.
Oh, amazing. And I want to give our listeners a little background to how you and I know each other from the... we met a couple months ago at the Festival of Literature in Dubai, and you certainly... we sort of bonded immediately, and I probably one of my first questions to you is, what is that giant stick with hair that looks like hair that you're carrying around with you? And you explained to me that this is toku toku. And could you tell listeners a little bit about this fabulous toku toku that I fell in love with in Dubai?
Absolutely. So New Zealand is the only country in the world to bestow upon their laureates, poet laureates, a toku toku. So that's T-O-K-O, T-O-K-O. And a toko toko is a Māori carved walking stick. And Māori are the indigenous people of Aotearoa, New Zealand. And New Zealand, you know, we've been in the headlines recently. We had our terrible first terrorist attack in our land, and the response of the nation, symbolised by our Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, really kind of was held up as an amazing example of humanity and seeing beyond ethnicity and race and class differences. And you know, so New Zealand is a country that celebrates, well, tries to celebrate all its multiplicities, and New Zealand is based on the Treaty of Waitangi, which promises co-sovereignty between Indigenous people and settlers who came from England in the main. And so we've incorporated this Māori tradition into the poet laureateship. And it's an amazing walking, talking stick, and it holds all the stories, and it's got stories carved into it symbolically, and it's comprised of many different pieces which each carry their own tales. And as poet laureate, I've made it my mission to take this toko toko far and wide, you know, up and down New Zealand, and I think now it's like 11 countries I've visited and told the tale of the toko toko. And what I love about it is that this material object grants people access to poetry. And, you know, generally people have been educated out of out of their kind of connection with poetry, because it's either been taught in a way that's been irrelevant for them or difficult to access, or only some people can understand poetry. And my mandate is to kind of open up access, because I believe that everyone has poetry inside them. You know, it's just a way of articulating our story. And the tokotoko, like I physically walk with the tokotoko because I believe that poetry is an embodied form of expression. And everyone has bodies and everyone can move and everyone has stories. And for me, poetry is like the easiest vehicle to help people tell their own story.
Mm. And to give the listeners a visual of tokotoko, we're not talking about a little cane or a little stick. How is tokotoko about 5 feet tall?
Yeah, it's about five and a half feet tall. It's made up of 11 pieces. I can disassemble it and reassemble it. It's made of indigenous hardwood. And the top part of it, because James, you referred to it's long hair, is actually a ritualistic fly whisk used by Samoan talking chiefs to sweep the air before they conduct ceremonial speaking. And the talking chief's role is to speak on behalf of the high chief and have the message received by the villagers. And it's, you know, the talking chief sweeps the ritualistic fly whisk through the air and holds the walking stick in the other hand. So, you know, I've occupied this very traditional role, but in a very contemporary way, and I've taken it into non-traditional spaces.
And I think at the Festival of Literature, you were more popular than tokotoko, but tokotoko came in second, and I love the way that you are so gracious about sharing and letting people hold tokotoko. And And for example, when we were on the camels and the horses, and then when we went up to the top of the tallest building, and we had a bit of a problem, right?
That's right. So we you know, half the group of writers kind of doubted I'd get the tokotoko through security, because it could be seen as a potential weapon. But I was encouraged to kind of use it as a walking stick, and I kind of gave myself a little bit of a limp to go through, and it passed through security and it was great. And we went to the top of the Burj Khalifa, at least 145 stories into the air, and groups of tourists swamped the tokotoko. You know, I had a large extended Indian family insist on taking photo after photo with me and tokotoko with each member of their family. And I got delayed, so I got separated from the group of writers. And when I came out to look for you all, I couldn't see anyone, and someone from security came up to me and started interrogating me about what it was, where I got it, how did I get it up there. And he grabbed hold of it and wouldn't let it go, while he also like began taking photos and he was on his phone. And I got a bit worried and concerned. I kind of just looked around and no one was there. And then what do I see but yourself and Riz Khan come through the gift shop, and you guys are laughing and talking, and you see me in my predicament and you continue laughing and talking. And, you know, I was getting a bit worried that the tokotoko would be taken away or confiscated. But when Riz informed the security guard whose guests we were, namely the Sheikh, and that we were there for this International Writers Festival, we were swiftly shown the exit, and actually bypassed a whole lot of queue, you know, a whole lot of people standing in line, and just were shown immediately out of the building.
Yes, which I was very grateful for, because I was done seeing the building, and you probably saved us an hour, and we got taken down in a private elevator.
But, you know, there is... So this little poem is about the tokotoko. Tokotoko, tokotoko on the wall. Who's the fairest poet of them all? Not me. I'm brown. And where we come from, we don't hang tokotoko on the wall, store them in libraries or archive them in museum drawers. We hold ours firmly in our hand. They help tell our story. They help us understand.
So,
and I wrote that in response to the fact that tokotoko are not archival objects, and the main tokotoko associated with the poet laureateship is on permanent display in the National Library in Wellington. And when I was presented with it at the investiture ceremony, I'd asked how many people had touched it, and they said probably about 30. And I said, well, as a Polynesian, I understand these material objects to have an innate spirit and an innate, what Māori call mana, or spiritual energy, and they actually need people to touch them to kind of come alive. And so I said to them, I'm not going to give this back until I get my own one, and set myself a challenge of taking the number of 30 people who'd previously touched it up to 1,000 in 3 months. And at the end of 3 months, I got 4,000 people to touch and stroke the tokotoko, and just took it with me everywhere, to festivals, to, you know, workshops that I run with community centres and corporates. And it was just, it was fantastic. And that culminated in me taking the tokotoko and introducing it to former President of the United States, Barack Obama, when he visited New Zealand in March last year.
That's just incredible. And you could really feel the positive energy you were creating at the festival, and how eager everyone was to meet you and find out about tokotoko. And I want to ask
you... It's amazing, because people just want to reach out and touch it, right? And nowadays, you can't just reach out and touch a person, right? You and I did, James, but that's, you know, but people,
we hugged, nothing inappropriate.
No, yeah. But you know, people just want to touch this tokotoko. It's so wonderful. And I committed a faux pas a few months ago when Prince Harry and Meghan were visiting. They were on their royal tour in New Zealand, and there was like, I'd performed a poem for their reception, and then I'm standing in front of Harry, and, you know, I've got the tokotoko, and there was a break in the conversation, and he looked at me, and he looked at the tokotoko, and I said, oh, would you like to touch my tokotoko? Immediately realizing that it sounded a bit rude, like if you didn't know what a tokotoko was, you know. And so, but he was great, and he goes, oh, I'd love to. And so he takes the tokotoko from me, he stamps it on the ground, you know, spreads, like widens his pace, and then says, you shall not pass, you know, from Lord of the Rings, Gandalf, right? And it was just the most extraordinary exchange. It was really great.
Well, you've had many great exchanges, and one of them that I had I'm so grateful you shared the experience with me, is when you performed your poem Unity for Queen Elizabeth at Westminster Abbey in 2016. And I'm wondering if you could just read a part of, if you could perform a part of Unity now that you
sure.
Her Majesty in the
sure. So every year the Queen sets a theme, and there are a number of rules around the composition of this poem, and the first rule was that it had to be called Unity because that was the theme she'd set. The second one was that it had to include all 53 nations in some way, shape, or form. The third one was that it had to be less than 3.5 minutes long because BBC were filming it live. The fourth one was that it had to appeal to children and to, you know, seniors and members of the royal family and heads of state. And so we had 1,000 kids from across the UK gathered in Westminster Abbey, along with all those dignitaries. So from 9-year-olds to, the Duke of Edinburgh was turning 94 that year. So from 9-year-olds to 94-year-olds. And, you know, there are quite a number of hoops to jump through, but I thought it's all worth it if I can represent what is close to my heart And that's the issue of global climate change. And if I can represent that on a global platform like Westminster Abbey, then all will be well. And then the fifth rule came in, which said that I couldn't be political at all. It could have to be apolitical in content. So, you know, it was a challenge, but I also laughed because it's like, that's the beauty of poetry. You know, you asked me about poetry earlier, and you can hide stuff in poetry, and that's what metaphor's all about. And so, yeah, I feel like I wrote quite a political poem, but got away with it because the palace censors didn't edit it at all. So I will read part of it for you. Let's talk about unity here in London's Westminster Abbey. Did you know there's a London in Kiribati, Ocean Island, South Pacific Sea? We're connected by currents of humanity, alliances, allegiances, colonial histories. For the salt in the sea, like the salt in our blood, like the dust in our bones, our final return to mud means though 53 flags fly for our countries, they're stitched from the fabric of our unity. It's called the Va in Samoan philosophy. What you do affects me. What we do affects the sea, land, wildlife. Take the honeybee, nature's model of unity, pollinating from flower to seed. Bees thrive in hives, keeping their queen. Unity keeps them alive, keeps them buzzing. They're key to our fruit and veggie supplies, but parasitic attacks and pesticides threaten the bee, then you, then me. It's all connected. That's unity. There's a you and an I in unity. Costs the earth, and yet it's free. My granddad's from Tuvalu, and to be specific, it's plop bang in the middle of the South Pacific. The smallest of our 53 Commonwealth nations, the largest in terms of reading vast constellations. My ancestors were guided by sky and sea trails, and way before Columbus even hoisted his sails.
That's so beautiful, Selena. And I want to encourage our listeners, the poem is in Selena's most recent book, Tightrope, which is filled with beautiful poetry. And she just read part of it for us here that she composed, as she stated, and read in Westminster Abbey for the Queen. And if I remember correctly, you got to meet Her Majesty afterwards?
I did indeed. So she she asked me, she said to me, how did you manage to memorize it all? And I replied to her, I'm a poet, Your Majesty, it's my job. And she responded, yes, yes, I suppose it is. Well done. it was great.
Yeah. That's truly a moment to remember. And I want to just switch gears a little bit to, as you know, the purpose of this podcast is about reading and books. And I also want to reflect on, I never feel sort of nervous or I'm very at peace with my book, The World is Just a Book Away. But for some reason, I felt a little bit nervous giving it to you and seeing what you would think of it.
You know, I was a little bit jet lagged. And when you gave it to me, I couldn't put it down. I thought, you know, I read through your introduction and it was such a gem. There was so much in it, and you managed to tell such a gripping story that was both your personal story and your mission statement for the book. And, you know, because I'm in the middle of writing my own memoir, I'm constantly being told by my editor that less is more, and to not overstate stuff that's obvious and let the connections be made by the reader. And so the introduction to A World Is Just a Book Away was just the perfect example of a story held lightly, but that kind of resonated very deeply.
Oh, thank you. That really means a lot to me. And I'm glad you enjoyed the book. It only took me 15 years.
Often things are like life projects, right? But less is always more. That's why I was like, you know, this wasn't just written overnight. You know, to be able to communicate quite beautifully and poignantly in just a few pages, this whole your own world and how it kind of overlaps with the world of this project was, I loved it. I was inspired by it.
Oh, thank you, Selena. And as you know, the whole, the genesis of the book, the nonprofit, and now the podcast is the importance of reading in books. So I'd like to segue into just asking briefly, what importance does reading play in your life?
Oh, boy. I mean, you know, we didn't grow up with books in our family, but we grew up in secondhand shops, and just to get us out of here, my mother would give us like 50 cents, the equivalent of 50 cents, and I would go away and fill up cardboard boxes with books because it was 50 cents a box. And so I, very early on, I accidentally kind of cultivated this very eclectic reading habit, and I was just hungry for anything and everything from, you know, Pam Eyre's poetry to Reader's Digest stories to cooking books to encyclopedias to creative nonfiction books on snakes. And I think that, like looking back now, I think that just cultivated a curiosity that has kind of served me really well in life.
And can you think of any particular book, because obviously you were a voracious reader, still are. Can you think of any book that touched you in particular?
Well, apart from cultivating an imagination, which is simply, there's nothing quite like reading text on a page. You've got no other visual cues. You've got to create these worlds in your head, and that resilience of the imagination is pretty key. But the first book that really moved me as a child was Spike Milligan's Bad Jelly the Witch. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but Spike Milligan was a British comedian. I was given this book. He hand wrote the text and he drew his own pictures. And I remember this quite visceral response to getting this book, this properly bound book, and seeing Spike's story, which I loved, but also all the kind of paratextual information culminated in this book saying to me, if he can do it, I can do it. Like, because he had quite sloppy handwriting, and yet it was part of the rich experience and connection of this book. And we used to listen to the radio on Sunday mornings, and every month they would play Spike Milligan reading Bad Jelly the Witch. And so the book and the story offered quite a holistic engagement with reading. You know, I not only read it physically, I heard it, I experienced it, because his drawings made me want to pick up a pen and start drawing like Spike Milligan. And they were like doodles, right? They weren't kind of out of the reach artistic representations. And I started making my own little books after reading Spike Milligan's Bad Jelly the Witch. And some 40 years later, I'm about to publish my first kind of graphic mini memoir, and it's called Mophead, and you know, I've produced it on an iPad, and I've written the text myself in my own handwriting, and I've drawn the pictures myself, and it's been so much fun, and it's a book for kids and adults.
And I think Mophead, because you have magnificent hair, but I think you didn't always maybe perceive it that way. Is that why Mophead?
Absolutely. So I've got really big hair. Like, I'm Samoan, Tuvaluan, French and English. So I've got really frizzy, curly hair. And as a child, I was teased and called Mophead, and that name stayed with me until probably, you know, high school years. And then all these years later, I am presented with New Zealand's highest poetry honour, the laureateship, and I'm given what essentially looks like a mop. You know, it's this toko toko with this huge hair of sinnet, of coconut fibre from the fly whisk, and it just, the connection was so powerful to move from being called Mophead to becoming New Zealand's Poet Laureate. I wanted to fill in the gaps, and I wanted to basically tell a story of how your difference can make the difference.
And you do that beautifully when I've just, in the opportunities I've had to hear you speak and perform. And also, I want to give you a shout out for the book when it comes out for our listeners. Consider looking it up, because you showed me the drawing that you did of your meeting the Queen, and I just thought it was so brilliantly done. I'm seeing the book.
Thank you, thanks, James.
What are you currently reading? What role do books play in your life now? Because you're so busy, I don't know how much time you have to read, but what role do books play in your life now, and what are you currently reading that you could recommend to our listeners?
Oh, well, I've just finished A Colour's Native Race and Empire. And A Colour is a Jamaican, Scottish, British-born public intellectual, Shakespearean hip-hop artist. He's just phenomenal, a phenomenal thinker, a phenomenal communicator. And I am interviewing him at the Auckland Writers Festival next month. So, you know, you're so right in terms of, I don't have much leisure time for reading because I teach at a university. So I, you know, when I'm asked to interview or when I'm asked to like I have to give myself reasons to read outside of the curriculum that I teach, because there's just not enough time. But I've also, so I've really enjoyed that. It's wide ranging. It's historical. It's public intellectualism at its best, because he's so accessible and clever. But I'm also a runner, and I trail run. And when I trail run, I listen to audiobooks. And so at the moment, I'm listening to, what is it? I often listen to several books at the same time. So at the moment, I'm listening to Oprah Winfrey's What I Know for Sure, which is fantastic. And also Rachel Naomi Remen, Kitchen Table Wisdom. And those little, I like vignettes and I like short stories because I can kind of digest it in one go if I'm traveling home on the boat. You know, it's 30 minutes and I can get to the end. I listen to a lot of different things all at the same time. I'm listening to Michelle Obama's Becoming, but I'm finding it hard to, she's got such a, because Michelle reads it, so she's got such a, I don't mean it in a bad way, but kind of a pedantic way of reading, and it just lulls me into like falling asleep. So a friend of mine said that, you know, I should kind of probably read it off the page because it's much better and I won't fall asleep. So I want to like it really badly.
Yeah, I just recently purchased the book myself. It's on my shelf, but I've been, since we started the podcast, I've been reading the books of people who In fact, I went through and reread Tightrope last night, and I've been reading the books of people I'm interviewing, so I haven't had the chance to read it either. But since I have you captive and on the spot, and it would be awkward for you to say no, although of course you have the to say no, I'm going to begin the second volume of The World Is Just a Book Away, the book, and I'd be really honored if you would participate.
I would be honored to be in it, James, as long as I can do my own picture. No, I'm kidding. Well, maybe not. Maybe I'm not kidding.
We'll talk about that. This, Selena, this is so, every time I talk to you, I just feel so uplifted and so you're just so full of joy and such a gift. So I'm really honored that you took the time to be with us today. And I want to ask you if there's anything else you want to share with our listeners.
I guess just that reading is so key to my life that I'm quite evangelistic about sharing its empowering possibilities. And God has given me the most difficult terrain to work with because I've got three non-reading teenage sons. And so, you know, I've learned to see that they actually help me keep it real when I go out into schools and community groups. And I'm always thinking of new ways to engage, particularly teenage boys. So it keeps me on my toes. And because I know that even if they're not into reading now, they could be in the future. And so it's my job just to kind of plant seeds. And that's what I think poetry, each poem for me is a seed that has the potential to grow into something that can help someone, heal someone, or connect someone. So yeah, those are my final words of wisdom for now.
And those beautiful final words of wisdom about planting seeds. Selena Tusitala-Marsh, you're an amazing person. It's been an amazing talk, and I'm so grateful that you're also one of my newest friends. Thank you.
Yay, me too, James. Me too.
Okay. Thank you so much, Selena.